Till Death Do Us Part is a lighthearted and sometimes satirical true crime podcast where we present our dysfunctional married take on serious cases involving other dysfunctional relationships. We hope you enjoy.
Hello and welcome to the 108th episode of Till Death Do Us Part.
I'm Daniel.
And I'm Melissa. I don't know what to say in this opening.
You guys are awesome. Thank you for listening and have a good night.
We didn't even talk about what we were going to say.
Oh, what are we going to say?
We're supposed to be witty and funny and real. And I can't think of a damn thing to say.
Me neither.
What's happening to us?
Nothing. I got home from work. We don't have any beer.
We haven't started drinking. Not that we even drink before these.
Should we start drinking? And then every time we're like, hey, honey, what do you have over there?
No, there's a lot of other really great podcasts that do that. I don't want to copy them.
Okay, forget it.
We could drink tea, herbal tea, and talk about the teas that we're drinking.
You're such a tease. That's stupid. Don't laugh. That's not even funny.
It's not. But looking at your face just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Well, should we just get right into factoids then?
Yes. These are not facts at all, but they are stories that are going to help you. And by you, I mean Melissa.
Oh, not our 11 listeners?
They will get nothing out of this. It's pointless. Don't listen.
Just fast forward.
This is from BuzzFeed.
Ooh, goody.
These are goofy things that patients have heard their medical professionals say to them in the process of something medical-ish.
Are you saying this because I've been going to the doctor a lot lately?
No.
Oh, okay.
I found the story a couple months ago and I thought it was hilarious. I'm going to start with this one. My surgeon, during surgery to replace pins in my broken finger that had been pushed out by my own body, said, I'm really getting them in here this time, you little freak of nature.
What?
So she had pins.
No, well, I get that, but was the doctor talking to her finger or
yes,
to her?
Basically to her.
Oh,
like,
that's
goofy. You freak of nature pushing these pins out. I'm really going to put these things in there this time.
Oh, that's a little awkward.
I was living in a foreign country and had a cold or flu type illness. I went to the doctor and he comes in eating a bowl of cereal. Already weird. He checks some things and says, do you know what AIDS is? I'm in complete shock and say, yes, I do. He follows up with, that's a virus and there is no cure. Finally, he ends with, but you don't have that virus. You have a different one, much more common and treatable. But I wanted you to understand why an antibiotic wouldn't work.
Oh, I'm like starting to sweat a little bit. That's really uncomfortable.
Oh, God. I went in for my checkup 6 weeks after my second kid. And the intern who was shadowing my OBGYN made the comment, oh, hey, you're looking great. Not to my face, but to the bottom half of me.
To her vagina?
Well, I mean, that is the other half. So there's that.
That's like in that movie Knocked Up where she goes to the doctor and it's the same doctor that delivered her sister's kids. And he goes, oh, you do look like your sister.
See?
As he's between her legs.
I think that's totally appropriate.
Oh, that gives me the, like, heebie-jeebies. Weird.
This is why I couldn't be a doctor, because I would just have way too much fun messing with people.
I think
I'd have a good bedside manner if they understood my sarcasm, dry humor.
I think there'd be a lot of complaints against you, to be honest.
I'd make it up to them.
How?
I don't know. I'd make them not die.
Oh.
Following a checkup. We're going to have to remove your testicles. Just kidding. You should have seen your face. See, that's what I would do. I would absolutely do that to every guy that came in. Like, what do you think, doctor? Oh, we're going to have to remove your testicles. I was told, whoops, I'm just going to kind of tack it on. Huh? It'll probably hold. While having my fingertip reattached after a freak accident.
Oh, gosh.
As I left the ER, a different medical professional said to me, oh, wow, they saved it? You were sure you were going to lose it. We even placed bets.
Oh.
My gynecological surgeon said, if you ever tried to have a baby, the kid would snap your pelvis in two and rip you in half.
Oh, that's nice.
He said it in the most casual manner. I was mortified.
That is awful. Why would you ever tell a woman that?
Because you're really, really smart at being a doctor, but the whole bedside manner thing just isn't it. It's just not there.
Had some doctors like that. Really good at their job.
See? And which would you rather have? Someone who's really good talking to you or someone who's really good fixing you?
I like doctors that are really good at fixing you who have staff and nurses who are hilarious.
Okay, that's what I want to do.
That's what I want.
When I grow up, that's what I want to be.
A nurse?
I want to be the guy next to the guy who's really smart and he can't form two sentences to say something to make people calm down. And I'll sit there and just talk to him.
All right.
It'll be a blast. No,
go not for at all. It.
Hey, if you don't mind, I'd like to show everyone pictures of your tonsils. According to her, I had the most disgusting tonsils she had ever seen in her years in the business, and gosh darn, she wanted to show them off.
I've been there in that moment, to be honest.
Where they bring people to look at
yes.
things of yours?
When I had that really bad strep throat. Probably 10 years ago.
They brought extra people in to
look? He brought extra people in to look, and they took pictures.
Wowzers.
Because it was so bad, because I had waited so long.
Oh, no fun.
Especially with two little kids.
I know most of our 11 listeners appreciate these, but here we go again. My previous OBGYN came through my line at my old job. For some reason, I blanked out on who he was. Like, I knew him. But for the life of me, I couldn't remember how. He saw I was struggling and said, don't remember me? I'll give you a hint. Last time I saw you, you were in my office with your ankles in the air. he said this loudly in front of a line of little old ladies fresh from church wanting to buy flowers from the garden center.
Oh, I would have thought she was making money on the side.
Well, that's
kind of what it sounded like. Funny guy.
She does follow up and says, he was an amazing doc and figured out what was wrong with me when no other doctor could. But in that moment, the embarrassment could have killed me. When I was younger, I was getting stitches after a skin lump removal on my leg. Those are always fun. The doctor and the nurse started to comment on how elastic my skin was and how nice it was to have young skin.
Oh, not a compliment.
I guess, until you wonder if they're going to take it. Like some weird horror movie.
It puts the lotion on its skin.
The hell's that from?
Are you kidding me?
No.
So disappointed in you. Silence of the Lambs.
Oh, I was going to guess that.
You were?
Yeah, no, because I remember there's... Lies. No, because I remember that has like a skin removal thing.
A skin removal thing. It puts the lotion on its skin.
Here's a quote from a doctor. If you want to help people, don't go into medicine. As a doctor, I'm nothing more than a people mechanic. And much like a car mechanic, I patch people back together well enough to get them out of the door until I see them again. If I could go back, I'd run as far away from medicine as I could.
Wow.
Doesn't that make you feel good?
Was that our ER doctor friend?
Probably. Why the hell did I go do all this school? God. Wow, you have the flattest feet I've ever seen. See, again, it just comes out because they're really mentally smart, but there's no filter. I wonder how this is going to make her feel.
No, I don't think there's any follow through. You just
blurt it
think out. Think it and blurt yeah. it, and then that's it. You just keep going. Hey, you know what? We pay them. So there you go.
That's true.
Actually, our insurance pays them, but you guys get the gist.
When I was 12, I had a dentist say, "Hold on, I think I might be counting wrong. You shouldn't have those yet." "Okay, never mind. Those are definitely your wisdom teeth. Your mouth is just huge, I guess."
Was it a girl or a boy?
They said it was the youngest they'd ever seen anyone get their wisdom teeth. They called in every dentist in the building to come look at my mouth.
Oh, wow.
If I was 12, I mean, if you took attention well, that wouldn't be so bad.
Huh.
But if you didn't like it, that could be mortifying.
I was the second oldest in our dentist office to get my wisdom teeth. Mine started growing in at 40. And there was a woman that they had recently taken out her wisdom teeth because they started growing in her 70s.
Oh, goodness.
So I didn't win the oldest, but I did win the second oldest.
So you're up there, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You're
and there I go old. Turning it on myself again, but, you know,
yeah.
This is our show.
Okay, you brought up strep throat.
Yes.
This will be my last one.
Okay.
Oh, my God. It looks like ground beef, said a doctor looking into my extremely painful strep-ridden throat. He gave me a Z-Pak from his stash there and then told me to take the first one now. It was bad.
Ooh, I can feel that. Strep throat is the worst.
Mm-hmm.
All right, those were fun. Thanks, honey. Daniel.
Yes, wife.
Are you ready for my case?
Is it funny?
No, not at all. It's actually horrific.
Oh, great.
Okay. Well, on Sunday, March 1st, 2015, a frantic call came into the Denver County 911 call center at 3:21 p.m. 50-year-old Robert Bob Feldman was panicked and desperate, telling the dispatcher that he had just arrived home and found his wife of over 10 years, 44-year-old Stacy Feldman, unresponsive in the shower. Denver fire and paramedics were immediately dispatched to the home at 3601 South Pontiac Way. During those initial few minutes, the 911 operator was assisting Bob in CPR. She was recorded as saying, "Count out loud so I can count with you." Bob would start to count and then ask for someone to please help him. When the paramedics arrived, they rushed upstairs to the second story and into the master bathroom through the bedroom. Stacy was lying on her back on the bathroom tile next to the shower/tub. The first responders attempted every life-saving measure, but it was too late. There were no signs of life, and Stacy Feldman was pronounced dead at 3:56 p.m. When investigators arrived on scene, they were told that the situation was reported as a medical event. The victim had possibly fallen in the shower and drowned. Investigators were also told that Bob had to be escorted from the room by officers on the scene because he was interfering with the paramedics. Bob told an officer that the couple had attended a party the night before. Stacy had consumed an edible prior to attending the party. She then drank a couple drinks, and when they returned home, Stacy had consumed more edibles. Bob did not see Stacy do this, nor did he know the amount. All right, so she was ready to party.
Wow, so she's doing edibles and alcohol?
Yep, one right after the other.
Goodness, look at her.
Is what Bob said.
Yeah.
Stacy had not been feeling well that morning, and at 8:30 a.m., he took their two small children to their religious school and then to the Purim Carnival at their synagogue across the street from the school, and then he returned home around 3 p.m. Bob walked upstairs and found Stacy unresponsive, lying in the tub with the shower running and the water was cold. Only he could not remember if she was face up or face down. Bob then pulled Stacy out of the tub and dialed 911. The two young children had followed Bob into the bathroom, and he instructed them to run to the neighbor's house. Bob also told the officer that Stacy had a history of minor medical issues that she took medications for. Stacy had rheumatoid arthritis and severe neck pain. Over the last year, Stacy had gotten in a ski accident, fallen off a ladder, breaking some ribs. She did this at her kid's school, by the way, and had slipped on some ice just the night before as they were going to the party.
Wait.
What?
She fell off a ladder. Oh, no, that was before.
Yeah, this wasn't the same day. This was over the course of a year.
What did she do before their party? Slipped on ice?
He's saying that she had slipped on some ice just the night before.
Okay. All right.
I took that as she had slipped on some ice as they were going to the party.
Oh, okay. Well, it can happen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what it's like to walk on ice, but...
I know what it's like to walk on eggshells.
Stacy had recently had two injections put into her spine for nerve pain. Bob seemed shocked and confused during the informal interview and had a hard time recalling the details of how he had found Stacy just an hour before. Bob even walked away from investigators at one point in the conversation after he had been asked what position Stacy's body was in when he found her. Bob said he could not remember and walked away, as if he was trying to gather a story. The officer felt like Bob was overacting in an effort to avoid speaking with him. Investigators from the crime scene unit responded to the scene. They observed a naked Stacy lying on her back on the floor of the master bedroom with a towel covering her parts. And her hair appeared to be wet. So I think that first responders moved her body from the bathroom into the bedroom to work on her, is what I'm thinking.
Okay.
A window and the sliding glass door that led out to a small balcony was open, which was strange because it was cold outside. It had even snowed the night before, but there were no footprints or other disturbances in the fresh snow on the balcony. So there was no sign of forced entry, and it did not appear that Stacy had struggled with an attacker. According to Bob, he had found Stacy lying in the standard size jetted bathtub with a shower head and sliding glass doors, and a towel hung neatly on the glass door towel rack. There was no standing water in the tub, and a moist washcloth was covering the drain.
So when he found her, his words, she's in the tub and the shower's on?
Yes, because it's a shower tub situation.
Gotcha.
It's not a separate tub and a separate shower.
Right. Okay. Huh.
And the water was cold because it had been running for so long.
Right. So basically their hot water heater stopped. Assuming they had a hot water heater and not an instant hot situation.
Well, it was 2015. The home did not sound like it was brand new, so it was a hot water heater.
Okay.
A metal rack from a corner shelf in the shower had fallen along with its contents. Bottles of personal hygiene products like shampoo, body wash, etc. There did not seem to be any sort of struggle or assault within the bathroom. And there was no water found on the floor in the bathroom, even though Bob claimed to have pulled Stacy out of the tub while the water was still running. So she would have been soaked.
But she was.
Her hair was wet.
Oh, okay. So she wasn't that wet?
When first responders got to the scene, it had been a few minutes of him trying CPR and things like that. And I think she was damp, but it wasn't. There wasn't water everywhere, which is what people just kept saying. There wasn't water on the floor.
If you drug my butt out of the shower, there would be water everywhere. Because,
yeah.
And if the shower's running, there's no way she's missing the spray from the shower because it's a shower tub combo. So there's no room for her. There's no place for her to go to miss the spray.
Right. And if you ever get out of the shower to run to the toilet or to go grab a towel that you forgot, there's water.
Oh, yeah.
everywhere.
Yeah, it looks like a dolphin grew legs and jumped out of the ocean and ran through your house. Yeah, totally.
And I always almost fall and hurt myself. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Abrasions and contusions were found all over Stacy's body, her face, her arms, her torso, and her legs.
What?
And significant scrapes on her back where she had been dragged over the frame for the sliding glass door to that shower. But none of these appeared significant enough to have caused her death. They were just abrasions and contusions, which means they were scrapes and bruises.
Well, what the hell happened to her? Well, you said she did fall. She fell off a ladder. That's not going to cause scrapes. That's going to be like bruising.
She'd fallen off a ladder months before.
Oh, okay.
It was the slipping on the ice that had happened the night before.
Now, if she had fallen off of a ladder and the ladder was at the top of a gravel hill and she was naked and fell down the hill, then it would make more sense.
An investigator noticed right away that Stacy was wearing not one, but two transdermal fentanyl patches, which are frequently used as painkillers.
So fentanyl is as strong as it gets.
Right. And she had two on her body.
Wow.
So she was in a lot of pain.
Yeah.
But why two? Could Stacy have accidentally overdosed on these patches and then fell in the shower? That's a good question.
I've never heard of that. I didn't know there was a patch containing fentanyl, but I guess that's anything's possible.
I'd never heard of that either.
Okay.
And investigators just weren't seeing any signs of a murder. So why were they there? One strange thing was noticed. Stacy was wearing a very nice dress watch. It was gold and silver, and it did not look like the kind of watch that you would wear in the shower. Stacy's body was transported to the medical examiner's office for further evaluation. But this was after Bob told them that he didn't want an autopsy performed.
Red flag.
The next morning, Monday, March 2nd, at 9:40 a.m., the post-mortem examination of 44-year-old Stacy was given. There were numerous injuries on the body, but the internal examination found that there were no internal injuries that would indicate the cause of death and that the results of testing would be required to help establish a cause of death. So there was nothing going on the inside. It was just bruises and scrapes on the outside.
Okay. Can I bring up the fact that she had fentanyl patches on her?
Yes.
I mean, all we hear about is fentanyl overdose constantly nowadays.
Right.
Especially in children. When I say children, you know, children of older children.
Like teens.
Yeah. So they get just the tiniest bit and they're dead because everything stops.
Well, that's why they were saying she had two on, which was very confusing because usually you only use one, not two.
Yeah. So wouldn't
that be could this have been an overdose?
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a cause of death?
You would think.
When it comes to fentanyl, the tiniest amount could kill like a large man.
But it might be different in patch form.
I assume so, obviously.
That's less potent.
Yeah, this is an actual medical administered amount, not something you get on the street.
Right.
But still.
No, I get it. Because that's all we hear right now is fentanyl, fentanyl, fentanyl. And then this is 2015, and she has two patches on her body.
And if your body turns into a blob of jello because you can't move your muscles because everything is so numb, and your heart basically stops, you couldn't climb your way out of a tub. No. I'm not saying that's what happened, but it just seems kind of weird.
That's what people were thinking.
Okay.
Bob was telling friends and family that Stacy's death had already been ruled an accident, that she had slipped on conditioner and then drowned.
Sure.
And that was it. Case closed. Or was it? Dun, dun, dun.
I wonder if she had a slippery, smooth tub surface, or did she have the non-slip bottom? You know what I'm talking about?
I think it was a standard jet garden tub. And so those automatically come with a textured bottom.
I would think.
It's not smooth. It's the new tubs that are all smooth on the bottom.
Well, the new tubs are like the old school tubs where they were porcelain.
And they're freestanding.
Yeah, and they were super slippery.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't get out of one.
No, they'd roll out of it.
Yeah, so maybe, I don't know.
Bob and Stacy were set up by a mutual friend who was playing matchmaker. Both were living in Boston at the time. Stacy was getting older, her early 30s, and was actively searching for a mate. So she agreed to the date. The blind date went well, and Stacy was soon enamored with the charismatic Bob. The couple were married in 2005 at the Ritz-Carlton in Montreal, Canada, where Robert had grown up and most of his family remained. Stacy was 34 and Robert was 40. They had a beautiful wedding, and a year later, their daughter was born, and soon after, their son. When you hear interviews with Stacy's friends and family, they say over and over again that she really wanted to be a mom.
That's cool.
That was her goal, was to be a mom. And it almost didn't matter who the father was, if that makes sense.
So being a mom was more important than the arrangement and having a proper marriage.
Right. So maybe Bob was just somebody who she thought, hey, I could do this part with. It didn't seem so much of a match made in heaven. It was a match made of convenience, is what I got from it.
She just wanted to be able to say, I'm a mother.
Yeah, I'm a mom. I have two beautiful kids and my entire life revolves around them.
That could really backfire, unfortunately.
The couple settled in the suburbs of Denver, Colorado, and soon immersed their lives into the community. Bob and Stacy were described as doting parents who always put their children first. Bob coaching the kids in sports and Stacy becoming part of the school's PTF. I believe this school called it a PTO. Not that it matters. It's Parent Teacher Foundation or Federation or whatever it's called.
Oh, okay.
But things aren't always as shiny behind closed doors. According to those closest with Stacy, her marriage to Bob had always been a struggle. Stacy had been hardworking and a go-getter. Bob, who was a wholesale meat representative, lacked ambition and drive. Bob was a bit of a con man and didn't want to work very hard at anything. One of Stacy's friends tell the story about a suitcase. So Bob would buy these old suitcases and he would break them before they would go on a trip. And as the suitcase came around the carousel, he would grab it and it would break. And then he would take it to the airline and say, you broke my suitcase. I want a new suitcase, or I want the money for my suitcase, and I want more or a better suitcase.
That's a good gig.
Yeah, but it kind of shows how shady he was. Normal people don't do that. No. Shady people do that.
I agree.
The home the couple shared was only in Bob's name, and the name on the credit cards was Bob Stacy Feldman, not Bob and Stacy Feldman.
That's weird. Why would she agree to that?
I don't know.
Okay.
Stacy had spent the first few years of the marriage as a stay-at-home mom, but the couple was in a financial freefall and she had to go back to work. Stacy was hired by a local charitable organization and she just thrived in her position. And a few years into the marriage, it was discovered by a close friend that Bob had active profiles on a couple dating sites in Denver. He was big into Tinder.
Good for him.
This friend chose to keep the knowledge to herself at that time because she did not want to hurt Stacy. You should hurt your friend. I'm sorry. You need to hurt your friend's feelings. She should have known.
Okay. You have a friend, Melissa. Yeah. Somehow you find out that her husband has Tinder profiles or whatever the hell they're called. Would you tell her?
Absolutely.
Even though you know it would hurt her?
Absolutely, I would.
Okay.
And I would say, I'm here for you. I will help you when whatever you need. But I could not live with myself if I knew that was happening and I didn't say anything.
I think the not telling would lead to much more trouble than telling.
Totally.
Especially in that case. Especially if he's a prick and does the whole suitcase thing. He already deserves to be told on, to be snitched on.
Agreed.
Okay. All right.
Eventually, Stacy did open up to certain people. One afternoon, a woman had come to the front door and told Stacy that Bob had been giving her money and that the two had engaged in sexual activity on multiple occasions. But she stayed with him.
And that's why it would have helped if she had known from her friend
about the dating sites.
Yeah.
Stacy was disgusted and hurt. And she had separated from Bob a few times and had even seen a divorce attorney once. But Bob always managed to weasel his way back in, promising that he would try harder and go to counseling. But none of that ever happened.
Try harder doing what? Not cheating on her?
That's what it sounds like. And going to counseling. So he was going to try harder.
Isn't that like black and white? It's not try harder. It's I will not do that anymore. It's zero. There's not like, well, I'll do it less.
Or the try. Well, I'll try to do that.
I'll try not to.
How about I will do that?
That's what I'm saying. Not try to not cheat on you. I just won't. And that's it. So if he doesn't do that, then it's over.
But how many people stick to that?
It doesn't matter.
No, I know. I'm just saying how many people say this will never happen again. And it happens again.
No, I know.
It happens again. And people just keep forgiving each other.
Well, because you're supposed to forgive and forget, right?
Oh, I guess. But
I don't know.
I don't ever forget.
Well, you're supposed to.
But I don't. Do you forget?
No.
No.
I just write it down and file it away somewhere in the back.
I put it in the notes in my phone.
No, I mean in my head. Mm-hmm. Just put it away somewhere.
Well, life continued on and Stacy devoted more of her time to the children. Stacy was laid to rest a few days after her death. The service room was filled with people who truly loved and cared for Stacy, especially her family, including her older middle sister, Susan Altman. Stacy was one of three girls, and she was the youngest girl. And so her sister Susan was the middle child, if that made sense.
Okay.
Susan had flown into Denver for the funeral and remained to help Bob and the children for 2 weeks. On the last day of Susan's trip, she went to say goodbye to Stacy at her grave. A chill came over Susan, and she heard Stacy say to her, "Susan, something's not right, and you have to do something about this." So before leaving Denver, Susan called the homicide department and talked to the detective assigned to Stacy's case. She told him her suspicions about Bob and that she suspected he had something to do with Stacy's death. The detective listened and began to realize that he had doubts as well. The crime scene, to him, did not make sense. A metal shelf was the only thing that had been disturbed in that shower, and there were product bottles all over the inside of the shower and on the outside of the tub, but they all remained upright and undisturbed. So if you're trying to get somebody out of the tub, you're going to knock down things that are close, right?
Oh, yeah.
But nothing was knocked down, only that metal shelf.
Gotcha.
The floor was perfectly dry, which was over an hour after Bob had called 911. But to me, it still would have been wet.
Oh, yeah. And if there was a mat, the mat would be wet.
And that's what I kept trying to find, because we all know that we have a mat in front of our shower or our bathtub. But I never could find anything about the mat, because I wanted to know if that was soaked, then yes, he pulled her out of the tub. If it wasn't, then that was a little fishy.
A lot of water clings to a body, as you well know. Obviously, you step out of the shower. And if there isn't a mat, there's going to be water everywhere. And it would take hours for that to all dry up.
And you'd fall because it's super slippery.
Yeah, depending on what the floor surface is. But
well, I would
tile. Yeah. But then if there's a mat, okay, fine. Maybe it absorbs some of the water. But then that would be wet. So there would be evidence of water somewhere, somehow, especially since supposedly he called 911 right after he found her and pulled her out of the shower, with the shower still running, there, yeah, it would be wet water everywhere.
And that's one of the main things that even the paramedics or the detectives say is that there was no water in that bathroom.
I don't remember. Did you tell me when they got there that the water was still running or it was off?
I think he had shut it off and then got her out of the tub.
So he just said that the water was running when he found her.
Right. But she was wet. I mean, her hair was wet.
Okay.
The washcloth that was found in the drain was not saturated with water. It was just moist. But if that had been in the shower, it would have been really wet from all the water.
Yeah.
So there's lots of questions. On May 4th, 2015, the autopsy result was completed, but the cause and manner of death was classified as undetermined. So we're already in May. This happened in the beginning of March, and now we're in the beginning of May. So this is 2 months later.
And they're still scratching their heads.
And they still don't know what happened to her.
Okay.
Besides the dozens of scrapes and bruises on Stacy's body, she also had a slightly enlarged heart and a mild case of the hardening of the arteries.
All right.
The toxicology report did not indicate the presence of THC. It was negative. If Stacy had consumed marijuana within the reported time frame, the test would have been positive. So there was no marijuana in her system from those edibles he said that she had.
What?
She also did not have any fentanyl in her system.
But she had fentanyl patches,
two of them. She had two patches on her, yes.
Oh. Uh-huh. All right, I have a theory.
You do? Do you want to share it yet or wait a little bit?
Well, okay. There's no way she took edibles and wouldn't have it stuff in her system. So yes. So obviously she didn't. And the only way she wouldn't have had fentanyl in her system is if they were applied to her skin post-mortem.
Boom, sir.
Because then your body wouldn't absorb them. Because your blood's not pumping.
Ding, ding, ding.
It would
ding.
Just be on the surface.
Sometimes you're too smart for your own good.
No, you're setting it up. It's a softball. I mean, we're playing softball here.
Are we? All right.
Yeah,
okay.
With like an extra big padded ball.
Denver firefighters from Engine 22 were interviewed by investigators. They had responded to the medical call at the residence. The consensus of the crew was that Bob was acting odd and overdramatic. The engineer and one other firefighter made attempts to talk to Bob to gather patient history and information, but he was purposely being uncooperative and made an effort to not answer the questions being asked. It was also noted that Bob was acting hysterical.
Yeah, that's odd.
Then he was like screaming and wailing and not answering questions and walking away from them. And he was getting so close to Stacy while they were trying to save her life that he was interfering with the paramedics and what they were doing.
That's weird.
And police assistance was requested. So the paramedics had to say, hey, get this guy out of here.
I don't know how I would react in that situation, but most people would be in some form of shock. If that were the first time, like if you came upon the scene, mm-hmm. being the spouse, you'd be in shock.
Yeah.
So the question is, how well do you function while also being in shock?
And everyone reacts differently. Some people could be really hysterical. Some people could be really quiet. And some people could even laugh. Nobody really knows how they're going to be in a situation like this.
But like you had mentioned, if he was in shock and all freaked out and hysterical, how are all the things in the shower upright and undisturbed?
That's a great question.
Like if all these things happened and he's freaking out, supposedly, there'd be stuff all over the place.
I agree.
Because he'd be in a full-blown panic, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would.
Well, to the detectives, everything now seemed off. So what happened to Stacy in the bathroom?
She died.
Oh boy. After several attempts to reach Bob for another interview, he finally contacted investigators on May 14th at 9:30 a.m. He said that he last talked to Stacy around 8:30 a.m. on March 1st. She told Bob that she was tired. And when Bob left the home, Stacy was asleep. Bob told investigators that he had gone to the temple for a service they were having for the opening of the new school, saying he was there till 9:30 or 10 o'clock in the morning. But no such service ever took place.
Okay, so that was a lie.
That was a lie.
Okay.
They were never having a service for the opening of a new school.
Gotcha. So he's just throwing stuff out.
Such an idiot. He came home around noon, changed clothes in the laundry room, and cleaned a portion of the garage because a shelf had fallen. But friends and family reported that the garage was always a mess and disorganized. So why would he care about a shelf falling?
Yeah, unless you're a really weird guy, most of our garages are a mess. Or retired. If you're retired, then your garage might be organized.
Bob told the detective that he was only at the residence for 10 minutes. Bob had called out to Stacy while in the laundry room, but she never responded. And he did remember not hearing any water running and that he would have if the shower was on. But she's upstairs taking a shower. I guess you can hear it if you're near the near the water heater.
Yeah, maybe. If you hear water flowing, I don't know.
Right. I've never lived in a two-story house, so I wouldn't know. Bob left the home and drove to the park to exercise. He did a little jogging and would stop periodically to do some push-ups and sit-ups.
No.
But according to those who knew Bob, he was never into physical fitness. Exercising was way out of character for the 50-year-old.
All right. No. No. Unless you're one of those crazy guys that's like insanely fit, no one goes to the park, jogs, stops, does push-ups and sit-ups, continues jogging. Like, that's something you do when you're like 22.
And it had snowed or the night before.
Or maybe if you're Rob Lowe. But other than that, nobody.
Okay. Well, I've had multiple people say that you sound like Rob Lowe, so that's a good...
I sure as hell don't look like him.
No.
With my shirt off.
You don't. That's okay. Silver Fox forever. But like I had said, it had snowed the night before. So there was snow on the ground in the park, and it was still cold.
Nope. I'm out. There's no way.
Bob then got a call from the children's religious school and left to pick them up. After being called multiple times by the director, Bob then repeated that he had seen Stacy consume the edible marijuana the night before and that she had told him that she was going to take some more or smoke marijuana when they got home from the party, only he did not witness her use any.
Okay, so she's doing all this because of what, pain? Is that why?
I think that's what they're alluding to.
Okay.
But there's no proof that she did any of this or that there was even any edibles at home.
Right. And then when they tested her, there was not a trace in her system.
Right.
So in other words, everything he's saying is a lie.
And then Bob denied any involvement in Stacy's death. But to investigators, red flags were popping up all over this case now because he's a big fat liar.
Yeah, but he doesn't have to prove himself innocent. They have to prove him guilty.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, it's very suspicious, but is that proof that he did it?
Then on June 11th, 2015, a call was placed to the local Crime Stoppers. It was a woman named Susan McBride. She was a former acquaintance of Bob's, but Susan knew him initially as Robert Wolf. Wolf was Bob's middle name.
Oh, mm-hmm. Bob the Wolf.
Susan was single and living in the Denver area, and the two had met on Tinder on February 23rd of 2015, so a short time before Stacy died.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm going to ask the question anyway. Are there really women seeking out 50-year-old men on Tinder to have hookup dates?
I guess.
For adult aerobics.
Some people form relationships really? From Tinder.
No, I know, but...
I guess.
All right. Hey, for all you single guys out there, you're screwed. But if you're married, for some reason, if you're kind of a not athletic 50-year-old man, evidently there's still a chance. So there you go.
Oh, boy. Bob and Susan messaged one another through the dating app and eventually moved to email and texting. Within hours of swiping right, the two were sitting across from one another sipping coffee. Now, Susan liked the guy that was calling himself Robert because he was very likable. He told her that he was married, but they had been separated for a couple of years. When Susan returned home from her date, she noticed that Robert had emailed her already. Susan decided to Google Robert Wolf and couldn't find anything. But there was a LinkedIn profile for a Robert W. Feldman. She saw a photo on the profile, and it was Robert. It was Bob.
What an idiot. What did he think was going to happen?
I don't know. And she saw that a Stacy Feldman also lived at the address she found on the LinkedIn profile.
Oh, my gosh.
Susan confronted Bob, and he told her that he had had a stalker, so he was apprehensive about giving out his last name. So that's why he said it was Wolf and not Feldman.
Who the hell stalks a 50-year-old semi-unathletic man?
He then told Susan that he and Stacy were divorced and alternated staying at the residence for the children because they could not afford two houses. Susan believed him, she invited Robert over for dinner at her house on February 26th.
Okay. All right. Fine. Go for it, ladies. Why not? Yeah. Red flags. Just ignore them. It's okay.
The consenting adults had a nice meal and ended the night with some adult aerobics.
That's it. All you got to do is feed them. You could be married, it's not middle age unless you live to be 100, but he's 50. I don't know. It just seems, it's not fair.
What's not fair?
He shouldn't be doing that well, is my point on Tinder. Oh. He's 50.
He was kind of a smooth talker.
So what?
I don't know. I'm not attracted to him at all.
Well, I haven't seen...
Actually, I'm not at all. He's not very attractive.
I haven't seen a picture of him, so I don't know if I'm attracted to him, but I'm just going to go with no.
Yeah, he kind of looks like a cross between Joe Pesci and Frankenstein. He's got this huge mop of black hair that that he colors.
Oh,
he's
sure.
not cute. Right. I don't know. And Stacy, gosh, she was gorgeous. This beautiful blonde with blue eyes. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Poor Susan. It just means she's
Stacy.
No, Susan.
Oh, now we're talking about Susan.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm saying poor Susan. She must be desperate.
I don't think she was desperate. I think she was just looking for a good time and somebody to possibly have a relationship with.
All right.
The two made plans to hang out that weekend, but Robert never called her to confirm their plans. Susan finally reached Robert after a few days, and he basically blew her off. So he was just using her. And Susan was pissed.
No.
Yeah.
Why would she be pissed?
Susan's a ball of fire. I like Susan. She found an email address for Stacy, and on the morning of March 1st, the day Stacy died, Susan sent her an email. She asked Stacy if she and Robert were divorced. Stacy answered that they were not divorced. Susan then sent Stacy forwarded emails between Susan and Bob and then gave Stacy her cell number. Stacy called Susan right away, and Susan told her what had happened between she and Robert. Stacy told Susan that Bob had cheated on her before and that she was done with him. Susan told the investigator that Stacy was so kind and apologized to her for Bob treating her so unkindly. So Stacy apologized for her deadbeat husband treating this one-night stand so cruelly.
Yeah, so she felt bad for the poor lady.
For Susan. That's how sweet and caring Stacy was. Now, that was the last time that the two women ever had contact because Stacy died a few hours later.
Mysteriously.
Susan supplied the investigators with copies of the email exchanges and also showed them an AT&T wireless statement that had an incoming call from Stacy's cell number on Sunday, March 1st, 2015 at 8:52 a.m.
Oh, boy.
Susan also identified Robert Feldman as the man she knew as Robert Wolf through a driver's license photo. Investigators now felt like they had a motive. Stacy must have confronted Bob about him cheating with Susan. Bob then murdered Stacy in a fit of rage. Now you have to prove it. You have a theory, but now you have to prove it.
Yeah.
In June, it was discovered that Bob had received money from a life insurance policy on Stacy. It was purchased in October of 2010 and worth $750,000, and Bob received it all. And there was no record of there ever being a life insurance policy taken out on Bob. It was just Stacy.
Huh.
One of the most interesting and informational interviews conducted was with the director of the children's religious school. She said that on the day Stacy died, there had been a carnival and that the religious school runs from 9 a.m. to 12 a.m. on Sundays. Bob had dropped the kids off that morning but never returned to pick them up at noon. The school's director finally reached Bob around 1 p.m. after trying the Feldman's landline, Stacy's cell number, and Bob's cell phone multiple times. Bob told her that he thought another family was taking the children to their home for the rest of the day. She informed him that there had been no prior arrangements made and that he needed to come get his children. Bob was there within 10 minutes. He was wearing gym shorts, a sweater, and tennis shoes. And he told the director that he had been at the gym, not that he was running at the park.
Oh.
So he can't keep his story straight now.
No.
Bob was not friendly and talkative like he normally was, but he did take the kids to the carnival and they stayed about an hour. Investigators were able to get Stacy's cell phone records for the morning of her death. She had been texting with her friend and neighbor that morning between 9:30 a.m. and 10:40 a.m. This neighbor also had children who attended the religious school. Stacy texted around 10 a.m. that she would be picking up her kids at noon and that she would see her friend at this carnival. So she had plans to meet up with another person, and she's not going to break those plans.
Right.
The neighbor picked up her children at 12, but never saw Bob or Stacy. She texted Stacy at 1 o'clock, but never heard back. The neighbor was the one who Bob said was supposed to be picking up the children, but there was never any plan or conversation about that. She and Stacy had made plans to meet at the carnival with the children. The 911 call made on March 1st was analyzed. In the recording, Bob reports that he has just found his wife not breathing in the shower. While the operator is gathering information on the caller's location, noises are heard in the background, like a toilet is being flushed and items have dropped on a hard surface. As the 911 dispatcher is instructing Bob in CPR, there are no obvious changes in Bob's breathing or respiration. It does not sound like he is even attempting CPR on Stacy. And I listened to the 911 call, and she's telling him to count out loud for her while he's doing CPR. And he's like, 1, 2, 3, 4. He's not like.
Yeah, it's exhausting. Even doing the practice CPR, you know, in like a classroom setting. If you're actually doing it, you are going to be soaked in sweat and exhausted.
Yeah, I can barely do it without almost passing out. When I'm having to do my CPR class every 2 years, it's and a workout,
man. You
got to
inflate the dummy.
Yeah, I don't have very good respiration.
Oh, boy. Yeah, he should be counting like 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 and you know, that's how
but
you're
like
doing
heavy
it.
Breathing and
oh yeah,
and, but nothing. It doesn't sound like he's doing.
Yeah,
anything.
He'd come back. Okay, yeah. Okay, I did that. I trumped the breath. Now what should I? I don't know what to do. What do I do? You know, he'd be all breathy.
Yeah, he doesn't sound out of breath at all.
Okay, I did that. Now what should I do?
I was more like, okay, help me. Help me.
Is he an opera singer?
No, he just was very dramatic. I mean, I would never know how I would be on a 911 call if I found you in the shower. But I don't really like Bob, and none of you will like Bob by the end of this, so we can make fun of his girly, crying voice to the 911 operator.
Obviously, it was enough to attract women to him on Tinder.
Oh, gosh.
Well, I'm just saying.
The 911 call has been reviewed by numerous homicide detectives, and all believe that they hear the sound of a toilet flushing in the background.
Who flushes a toilet while they're on the phone with 911?
And what was he flushing? Did she not flush before she went and took a shower? Well, or was he flushing something down the toilet?
That's a good point.
It is also noted that there are numerous actions and statements made by Bob during the 911 call that could be considered guilty indicators.
Okay.
Because he keeps saying, help me, and not help her or help Stacy or even help my wife. It's all about him.
Gotcha.
Where you would usually be like, please get her. She's dying. Or right. Please come help her. But it's like, help me. Help me. I hope I never have to say that again.
I hate this guy already.
While talking to a relative about Stacy's case, Susan Altman, Stacy's sister, heard about the Training Institute on Strangulation Prevention. Susan told the detective about the institute, and they set up a meeting. On Tuesday, October 24th, 2015, investigators met with a Dr. William Smock, a nationally recognized expert in domestic violence-related strangulation and suffocation injuries. He was a doctor of emergency services with a fellowship in forensics. Dr. Smock has been witness to thousands of autopsies and trained law enforcement and pathologists in strangulation and suffocation cases. He reviewed the autopsy report and photographs of Stacy Feldman from the scene and at her autopsy. Now, based on his expertise, he believed that Stacy had been strangled and suffocated and that the matter of death was homicide.
What?
But Dr. Smock agreed to further review the autopsy report and photographs, plus the crime scene evidence, and then provide a written opinion on the cause and manner of death of Stacy. 2 years later, in December of 2017, a written report by Dr. Smock was received. He states that in his opinion, Stacy Feldman died as a direct result of asphyxia and/or suffocation. Her injuries are the result of an assault, which included blunt force trauma and strangulation. Stacy's injuries include facial blunt force trauma, a chipped tooth resulting from trauma experienced inside and outside the mouth. Dr. Smock believed that the attacker pressed against Stacy's nose and mouth, suffocating her. Petechial hemorrhages were found in both of her eyes, and there were more than 100 burst capillaries. He found 80 separate injuries, including bleeding under her scalp, multiple blows, and multiple impacts on Stacy's body. The backs of her hands had bruises, which is a defensive injury, indicating that Stacy was trying to protect herself from a beating or attack. She had a bra indentation on her shoulder and patterned imprints on the upper extremities from someone pressing firmly on her skin, and then the weave pattern of the clothing that she was wearing was transferred.
So how did none of this come out initially?
That's a great question.
It seems to me that even though this guy is very smart and very experienced, some of this should have been observed in the exam, right?
You would think that would have happened.
Okay.
But I'll,
I know that
maybe
we don't,
I'll answer more of your
I know
questions.
We don't live in a CSI,
no.
You know, TV show
no.
world, but.
Stacy also had large bruises that were found on the inside of both of her arms. Dr. Smock believed that Stacy was murdered while fully clothed and then stripped naked and put in the shower.
Gotcha. So she was already dead when she was placed in the shower.
Yes. The physical evidence showed that Stacy was suffocated while, quote unquote, someone kneeled on her shoulders to pin her down after they had beaten her for a prolonged period of time, which would explain the markings from the clothing that she was wearing on her shoulders and the bruises on the inside of her arms because somebody was straddled over her holding her down.
But was her face all messed up? Like she was beaten? Because they said they basically couldn't figure out how she died. But wouldn't you think if someone was beaten that there would be all kinds of damage to their face?
Right. Oh, gosh. These are all the questions that I had that I couldn't find the answers to.
No, but I have a thought too. But
she did have bleeding under her scalp. And she did have a chipped tooth. And she did have blunt force trauma wounds inside of her mouth and outside of her mouth. So there was
some damage to her, but it was not overly obvious.
Right. And the original pathologist was saying that these wounds could have happened in the bathtub when she fell and when
gotcha.
Bob was trying to get her out of the bathtub, that these can be explained by that action.
Here's a thought.
Okay.
So she was covered in lots of little marks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then that means if she was dead before she went in the shower, you could take a person that is all tore up with blood all over them or marks, mm-hmm. and then you put them in the shower and run the shower over them and kind of rinse the skin clean.
That's true.
And then
I didn't even think of that.
And then you let it sit and dry off. Then you take it out.
Her. Like the body?
And then take her. Yeah, take the body out.
I didn't even think about that. So there could have been blood, but it was all washed down the
right.
drain.
Right. That's why there's nothing there. So essentially, a person, we'll say Bob.
Bob.
Hypothetically, Bob does all this stuff to her, then goes, oh, crap, I got to clean up. So he throws her in the shower and lets the shower rinse her off. He kind of dries her off. Although then now I'm suggesting that there would be evidence like a bloody towel or bloody clothing that he's removed.
I was just going to say that. They didn't find any blood around the bedroom or in the bathroom. So if she had blood on her, then there might be blood at the scene, but there wasn't any.
So unless she was attacked in the shower, but that contradicts the fact that she was clothed, according to this expert.
Right.
So, but he's not moving her very far. So it had to happen close. So she could have been in the bathroom, still clothed, attacked, then stripped, put in the shower, let the shower just sit there and run on her for a while. Now she's dead. So there's no blood flow. And then he cleans up. Wipes up the bathroom. I mean, a bathroom is probably the easiest thing to clean as opposed to, say, like a living room.
Right, but there wasn't any water on the floor.
Well, you could have cleaned it up.
It's true.
And then disposed of the stuff somewhere. I don't know.
Well, and then this, I was going to save this for when I talk about the trial, but they did not think that they were walking into a murder scene. They thought this was a medical
yep.
emergency. So the house was not closed up. The house was not made a crime scene. So they didn't do any sort of evidence removal. They didn't look in the washing machine.
Right.
For her clothes or how many towels were wet, maybe. They didn't walk in there ready to look for evidence. They just walked in there thinking it was a medical issue.
He could have wiped everything down.
Oh, God. My butt is killing me. Okay.
Put her body in the shower. With the shower running over her body, and then taking all the clothing, the towels, and just go throw them on the washing machine and run the wash.
Because nobody looked in it.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, and even if they did, there's no evidence. He could just say, oh, yeah, well, I was doing the wash. And then I happened to come up here and discover her in the shower. And then he drags her out and calls 911. Meanwhile, her body has a chance to be all rinsed off by the shower.
There goes your DNA.
Yeah.
There goes your blood evidence. I like your theory. Prosecutors now felt like they had enough evidence against Bob to prosecute him. 53-year-old Bob Feldman was arrested on February 16, 2018, and charged with one count of first-degree murder in the death of his wife, Stacy, almost 3 years since the day that she died. During a preliminary hearing, the judge agreed with the defense's theory that due to medical issues, Stacy slipped and fell in the shower, causing her death, and that the state did not have sufficient evidence. But how do her wounds match that? If we're going to go by Dr. Smock, and she has 80 wounds, and she is bleeding under the scalp, and she has blunt force trauma to her mouth, then that does not match the evidence from falling in a bathtub.
No.
So that didn't make any sense to me, but, you know, I wasn't there. So Bob was released soon after on a maximum supervision house arrest and a $1 million bond. During Bob's house arrest, he was only to leave the residence to go to medical appointments, meetings at his lawyer's office, and the grocery store. But during the summer of 2020, Bob was renting out his pool and backyard for people's parties. I guess there was an app during the pandemic where you could rent out your backyard for people. Did you know that?
No. So he's on house arrest renting out his backyard.
Yep. For people to have parties.
That's brilliant.
But I loved that his neighbors would snitch on him. His neighbors snitched on him all the time. It was pretty brilliant.
So I'm assuming Bob doesn't have a job?
No, he couldn't work.
So he's
during
just
this.
Living off the $750. Been 3 years, so you know he's blown most of it by now.
Yep, and he hired high-powered defense attorneys that were expensive. Yes.
Well, now he has the money to hire prostitutes. Oh, I'm sorry, sex workers, so he doesn't have to go on Tinder anymore.
Oh, gross.
And they can just Uber to his house.
Ugh. I hope no one ever sleeps with him ever again.
Unless it's a cellmate. I don't know how this story ends, so I'm just guessing. I don't know.
The trial was set to begin in April of 2020, but was repeatedly delayed due to the COVID pandemic. Finally, 7 years after Stacy Feldman was found dead on her bathroom floor, 58-year-old Bob Feldman went on trial in April of 2022. For 7 days, the state was out to prove that Bob killed Stacy after she confronted him about his cheating. It was an uphill battle since there was no murder weapon or DNA evidence. They focused on Bob's changing stories, his behavior the day of Stacy's death and the weeks after, plus the 911 call. Bob was not out of breath while supposedly giving Stacy CPR. And kept saying, help me, instead of help Stacy or help my wife, like I had said before. Susan McBride testified about the emails and her conversation with Stacy the day she died. It turned out that Bob had deleted all of his email exchange with Susan the day Stacy died, too.
That's suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Dr. William Smock testified that he found evidence that Stacy was strangled and suffocated. Her attacker, who we're all thinking is Bob, put pressure on her face and neck and her arms, straddling Stacy's upper torso and holding her arms down with his knees and legs, then placing his hand over her nose and mouth while pushing on her neck and obstructing her airway with his other hand. Bob then undressed Stacy and put her in the shower, forgetting to remove her watch.
Oh, yeah. She would have. No one's going to leave a dress watch on and then take a shower.
No. I also wanted to tell everyone, and I forgot about this, but during the autopsy, there was no water in her lungs. So she did not drown, like Bob was telling people that she had. I forgot to mention that. Yeah.
Well, then how do they explain that? How do they explain she died if there's no evidence of any of the scenarios that he put forth?
Exactly, because all they're saying is that she slipped in the shower and died. But they're not saying what happened internally.
Right.
Like, her heart just stopped because she had hardening of the arteries and an enlarged heart.
Oh, if that were the case, man, there'd be people dropping dead all over the place.
Absolutely.
I mean, come on.
It just doesn't make any sense. So are you picturing someone straddling another human being and putting their hand over their nose and their mouth and then pressing down on their neck?
That would be terrible.
But that also explained the blunt force trauma to Stacy's lips and mouth, including the chipped tooth, and the extensive injuries and bruising to her body, especially her upper arms and the shoulders.
So she's flailing, probably, because you're in full-blown panic mode because there's a hand over your mouth and your nose and on your neck. So you know you got seconds, not minutes. You're doing everything you can. You're flailing, you're moving, and he's holding. And, of course, the pressure is going to basically grind your lips into your teeth.
But he's also sitting on her chest, like straddling her chest with her arms at her side, and his legs are on her arms. And he was a big boy. I think they said he was 210 pounds.
And 5'2".
No, he was average size. But, oh gosh, poor thing. For the final 2 days of the trial, the defense did everything they could to reinterpret the evidence. They said that the police did not treat the home as a crime scene because they believed Stacy's death was an accident, therefore not collecting any physical evidence from the scene. The 911 call in the days after Stacy's death, they said, you know, everyone responds differently to a tragic situation. And no one can say for absolute certainty that Stacy had confronted Bob about Susan McBride. Now, Stacy, I don't know if she would have said anything, but she was texting her neighbor and friend during that time that she was talking to Susan. And she never mentioned that over a text thread, which maybe she wouldn't. Maybe she was embarrassed or she wanted to figure more things out on her own. The wounds on Stacy could have been caused by her still being alive when Bob was pulling her out of the tub. Her body was hitting the sides of the bath, the faucet, and the track on the tub surface and the ground. So maybe all those injuries came from Bob pulling her out of the bathtub. The original forensic pathologist still believed that Stacy's death was undetermined, and they still could not rule the death a homicide. After 9 days of testimony and 3 hours of jury deliberation, Bob Feldman was found guilty of first-degree murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole. Bob is serving out his sentence at the Sterling Correctional Facility in Colorado, and Stacy's two children are being raised by Stacy's family.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, I actually thought you were going to go with he got out.
Nope.
Like he was freed.
Nope. He's gone.
Okay, good. All right, there is hope then.
I know. Some of them turn out way different than we think they're going to turn out.
Oh my gosh.
All right, I got a fun fact. Stacy's teenage daughter, who was 9 years old at the time of her mom's death, testified at the trial. She was on the stand for 20 minutes and said that March 1st, 2015 was a very normal day. Stacy was happy that morning. Her daughter remembered walking down the stairs and having breakfast with the family. And she said there was talking and nothing seemed unusual. She and her brother went to religious school and then to a carnival. Stacy was supposed to pick them up but never showed. The school called their father and he picked them up. After the carnival, Bob took the children to a bike shop and then they headed home. She remembers being excited about showing Stacy all the prizes that she had won at the carnival. Bob screamed at the children that there was an emergency and to go to the neighbor's house. The daughter said that her mother never said anything about feeling ill that morning, nor did she say she was going back to bed.
Wow. That's a lot for a 9-year-old to have to try and remember and recount on the stand.
Well, she was a teenager at this time. I mean, it's 7 years later.
She remembers
that?
So she
was 16.
Gosh.
16, 17 on the stand.
Would you remember a particular day? I mean, obviously it was traumatic because it was the day your mom died.
Well, yeah, it's memorable. I guess for a horrific way or a horrific reason.
I guess it would imprint quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that makes sense.
So, Daniel, what did you think of my case?
My question is, why the hell did he do it?
Well, we have really two motives, I think, in this case. We have she found out that he was cheating on her, and she had proof from emails and a phone conversation with another woman. And there was $750,000 life insurance policy, and they had very little money at this time.
Okay, so then that's it. The motive is he's a lazy piece of crap, doesn't want to do anything, and isn't interested in her, and kind of just wants to do whatever he wants to do, but he doesn't want to have to actually have a normal job.
But I don't necessarily think that this case is premeditated. I almost feel like this was a crime of passion. But then there's this money motive.
Like she confronted him and then he snapped a little bit.
And then he probably hit her and then just went from there. Then just maybe started wailing on her. Because Stacy never mentioned any sort of physical abuse. But family and friends believe there was a lot of mental abuse and controlling behavior from Bob when it came to Stacy.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But then again, like law enforcement is going to say, well, then why didn't you call? Why is there no report?
I think that if she had been hit in the past, she would have called.
Yeah.
I think that's the type of woman that Stacy is.
So she could handle the mental stuff, but
for her kids.
Right.
To keep this family unit for her kids. I think she would have put up with that, but I don't think she would have put up with any sort of physical abuse.
Gotcha.
I think this was the first time.
The most annoying part is he probably kept the money. They didn't make him repay it back.
He did. It actually went to court.
Oh.
Because they were suing him. Stacy's family was suing him on behalf of the children because he was spending all of the life insurance money. And they said that somebody who is being prosecuted for murdering this person should not benefit from the money from the life insurance. And at one point it was stopped and then he regained the use of the money.
Oh.
Yeah.
Like it's too bad they couldn't have like frozen it somehow.
They did for a limited amount of time and then it was overturned.
Yeah.
And then he just got to live on that money.
That wouldn't have lasted very long, though.
No, he was
750.
I'm sure he was spending it like
gonna,
crazy.
It's not going to last very long.
Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of money, but you start figuring it out, it's really not. And then, especially if you're someone like him, who you're not really trying to live with a budget, be very conservative with your money. So that money would go quick. I'd be surprised if he had any left even after 4 years.
Well, and he was hired high-priced attorneys.
Yeah,
so that's not cheap.
That's going to soak up practically all of it.
Yeah.
So if you have a friend who you know is being cheated on by a significant other and there's proof, like a Tinder thing, advise them.
Mm-hmm. Tell them.
First, to contact an attorney, then a private investigator, build a case against them, then leave them.
They might be pissed at first, but they won't be pissed forever.
Well, like you said, at least then you've told them, so they can't say you didn't tell them.
Right.
You might save a life.
All right. Well, if you're enjoying our show, please go rate and review us. It helps out a lot on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. We are only on Instagram at Till Death Do Us Part Podcast. And we have a Patreon if you want more of us. You can find that in our link tree on Instagram or just go to patreon.com and look up Till Death Do Us Part Podcast and we'll pop up.
That's a lot.
It's all spinoff shows that we've created starring us.
God.
Lucky you.
You will be sick of us.
Absolutely.
At that point.
Oh, wait. We forgot to do my sources and Patreon.
Sorry.
Oops. All right. So my sources for this case were, of course, a crap ton of articles. I found a 9-page arrest warrant on Bob. And then I did watch a Dateline episode on this case.
9 pages.
It was actually a really good arrest warrant.
Sounds thorough.
I was pretty impressed. All right. We got some Patreons, babe. Here's your list.
Thank you guys so much for supporting our show. We really appreciate it. And we would like to thank Megan B. Thanks, Megan. Jasmine K. Thank you, Jasmine. Carly S. Thanks, Carly. Jennifer T. Thank you, Jennifer. And Megan R. Thank you, Megan. Thank you guys so much for helping us out.
Every person helps us out immensely. So thank you.
Absolutely.
And be careful.
For marriage is a life sentence.
And divorce is always the better option.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.